Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808. And today we have a very special guest on board, a producer whose name is ringing out in the underground scene after some stellar work with the likes of Rock Marciano, Griselda, Ransom, Mac Homie, Billy Woods, Navy Blue, just so many people. And just one of my favorite producers in the game right now. We've got the Loop Master General in the house. It is Nicholas Craven. How are you doing, man?
Very good. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, man. Thanks for coming on. Let me get this right. Is it Nicholas or Nicolas? Because I know you're in Montreal, right? So
I've always been called Nicolas my whole life. Even my dad, who was actually born in London, has always called me Nicolas Craven. And he would call me Nicolas as a kid. So Nicholas is just how people in the States read my name, I guess. And I've ran with it. It's Nicholas now as far as the artist name.
Okay, nice, man. Nice. Love it. Love it, man. Well, man, you've been, and I know a lot of the listeners are probably fans anyway, because we have a playlist. You pretty much are running that playlist half the time. All your beats are on there. But before we jump into like what we're going to be doing today, it's your first time on the pod. So I just wanted to ask you what I ask everyone who comes on. Nicholas, man, what is the least hip hop thing you've done in the last 24 hours?
Least hip hop? Damn. I'm looking for an Airbnb with a hot tub for Valentine's Day for me and my girl.
That's good.
Is that hip hop? I don't know.
It's playlistic. I love it. It's, you know, it's got that vibe. It's very thoughtful. So, man, well,
it's her idea. I won't take credit for it.
All right. I see. No, I like it. I like that, man. It's the first time we've had that as well. So usually it's down to cuisine or laundry, you know, something like that. But that's a new one. I like it. Well, Nicholas, man, we are breaking the mold here a little bit with this episode, because usually we're bringing you that 90s flavor, but we're talking about an album today. You're bringing an album on today, yeah? That's actually from 2010. But yes, whilst doing modern underground rap's blueprint, it at the same time has very deep roots in the golden era of the 90s, I would say. And it's Rock Marciano's classic debut, Marsburg. We're going to go in. If we're going to break the mold, it had to be something big, and it is. This is a big album. I asked you to come on the pod. I emailed you and just said, like, you know, do you want to bring an album on? And Marsburg was the first album, like, you just named. Why? Why was that the album, man?
Well, I've always felt like when I'm trying to do, like, when I would show my beats to people, people always say, like, oh, nice, so you make, like, old school beats. And I've always felt a way about that because, yeah, it is kind of the same ethics and the same code as, like, how people would do it, like, forever in the history of hip hop. But the sound that we've been doing since Marsburg is a new sound. It's a sound of, like, that would usually be reserved for interludes or intros on old school 90s albums. Now that type of sound is put to the forefront. And that's why I find that album so important, because to me, it, like, really revamped a sound that was, to me, as a fan of, you know, everything from the 90s, that sound by the end of the 2010s, like, new people coming with that sound, it wasn't sounding as good as it was before. To me, until Marciano came out, and then he had the flood that ensued.
Yeah. So give me your, like, history on, like, before you hit Marsburg. Like, who were you feeling? What was the sounds you were making beats before that, right? So, I mean, what was your sound like at that point, and who influenced it, and what were you feeling? And then what did Marsburg do to kind of change your thinking on how I'm going to attack this production game?
I was a fan of tons of producers, but the people I would probably try to emulate the most would be DJ Premier, Ninth Wonder, Heatmakers, RZA. But, like, really, like, I would say DJ Premier and Ninth Wonder were, like, two really big people that I really tried to, because also Ninth Wonder was using DAWs, like Fruity Loops at the time and everything. So yeah, it had a lot of parallels with the way I was doing my music. So that was really big influence, the minimalism, just, you know, sample, kick, snare, hi-hat, bass line, that's it, you know. And I was doing that forever. And by 2010, I only found out about Marsburg in 2013. And by 2010, I was playing guitar and organs on beat, trying to be like UGK and trying to do, like, you know, 3-6 Mafia type beats, sampling like DJ Paul cassettes and stuff like that. Mm-mm-mm. And honestly, it's like, I love 3-6. I love UGK. I love, you know, DJ Screw, but it was never really the music I enjoyed the most making. Me, it's just, there's nothing I like better than looking for samples and just sitting down and digging and digging and digging and digging. And I found sometimes that I would not, like, I would find a sample and and I would feel obligated to put drums over it, even though I wasn't feeling the idea. And sometimes the drums would come out good, sometimes they would come out not so good. And it would take all the, like, all the value of my crate digging would be taken away by drums that would ruin the beat. When I heard Marciano doing just stripped down beats, just loops, it just puts in value his loop, his crate digging skills over everything. So that's what I really enjoyed. So when he started doing that, it gave me the courage to feel like I didn't have to put drums anymore.
Damn, that's so interesting. Because I think I came to this album about that time. It was quite late. And in fact, I was thinking I was more into car than rock at that time. It's a natural progression, I feel. If you're into one, you're probably going to progress to the other. When I hear Marsberg for the first time, it took me time to get acclimatized that sound, if you know what I mean. Especially in the 90s, where there's so many different types. Sampling, obviously, De La, Tribe, Gangstar, all these people are like using just crazy samples. That's what I was used to. I wasn't used to like the loop. Just, oh, okay, so this is it. And then it kind of, you get conditioned to it. And before you know it, like, you look nowadays and it's just like everywhere. That's just everywhere. And your sound itself is, it's an evolution of that. Do you know what I mean? It's in that same thread. So, but I mean, talking about rock as well as a person, I know you've worked with Rock, you did a track with him. I mean, how was that? Like, how was he to work with and stuff like that?
That was very easy. That was just, I contacted Jazz. We did the necessary business. He sent the beat over to Rock, and I chose that beat. Usually, to a rapper, I'll maybe send him a pack of beats to choose from, or I'll send him like three beats. That was one of the first times I sent the rapper only one beat. I knew that was going to be the beat, the Wolfing Down beat. And the song, the beat, the instrumental, like, was originally called Wolfing Down anyways. He sent it back to me in about a month, and I was just blown away. I just couldn't believe it. And I held on to it for like 5 months to finally put it on my album. Yeah. But that was like very easy. I didn't even have that much communication with Rock at that moment. But then a few years later, Rock, I think a few, like, I forget what it was, but I think 2018, 17, Rock started hitting me up like, yo, we got to work. Like, you got to send me more beats. And we started talking. He started calling me, recorded on a few songs. The songs didn't come out. And now we're like really talking, like, you know, we've met and everything. So like now we're locked in. Now I'm like, I'm part of the team basically. So
that's wicked.
It's a dream come true. Honestly, just listening back to Marsberg and preparing for this interview, like, it just brought me back to like how I felt when I first heard that and thinking where I am now. It's very nice. But just a little parenthesis though, you reminded me when you said that you weren't used to the Marsberg sound of just loops. You reminded me that there was an album before Marsberg that did that sound pretty much in its entirety, but without raps. And that was J Dilla's Donuts album.
For sure.
Because to me, that's the thing. Like, I always had an affinity for that because when I heard the Marsberg album, I was already used to it because I loved Whip You With a Strap by Ghostface, Nutmeg by Ghostface, Dear Summer by Jay-Z, the Dear Summer remix by Lil Wayne, which had Lil Wayne rapping over a drumless beat. Like, all these types of songs, Hollow Bones by Wu-Tang, like, they always rose up to being my favorite songs off any given album. So when I heard the Marsberg album, it was just like a gift to me. Like, it felt like it was made just for me.
That's amazing. Before we jump into like that drumless sound and stuff like that, when you are working with someone like Rock, and what are the lessons? Like, is there stuff you've learned like working with him where you're like, damn, I'm actually going to take that forward with me in my craft, if you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, for sure. He's recommended programs that I should use, different types of ways to cut out things on the sample. Like, I'm not going to get too deep into it because he got told by somebody that told him not to say it, and then he gave it down to me and everything. So I'm not going to put it out necessarily, but when we met, like, I was just trying to soak as much information as I could, learn as much as I could. Cause me, it's like with Rock also, like, I just appreciate his ethics as far as creating too. Just like his angle, the way he like comes at it, like just his morals and values as to what is beat making and sampling for a hip hop song.
It's interesting when you say that, because the morals and like there's a whole ethics to this game. And I'm not a beat maker, so I'm not a producer. I don't know this, but as I'm doing these interviews with people, there is this kind of no snitching on samples. Obviously, you know, we knew that from back in the 90s. You don't ever snitch on a sample. Primo was doing interludes on Gangsta Records talking about calling out snitches, you know? That's interesting, because I remember at the time, Rock came out with Flip. His career path is crazy anyway, I feel. But like, he was digging with Large Pro. There's your 90s goat teaching a person, here's how you dig, here's where you should go, here are the, and when you hear these interviews with Rock and he like says, oh, that snow sample, I found that snow sample on the same day I found this other sample. I can't imagine as a producer like yourself what it must feel like to just hear the sample and just be like, bang, that's it. I am, this is going to be gold. That must feel good, right?
Yeah, it's like crack, man. It's like, it's the whole reason I do this. It's, I chased the magic dragon. That feeling.
That's amazing. That is amazing, man. Yeah, but I mean, that's it, isn't it, right? And I feel like with Marsberg, I mean, I want to talk about tracks and like his flow, his bars, and we talk about the production, right? And but even his bars, like everything about this album is kind of like his statement record was such a statement. We have a little category on the pod, which is like your five mic moment, or like, is this his apex, would you say, for Rock? It's hard to say with Rock because he's done so much at such a good level. Where do you think this lies on the trajectory of like his apex in his career at the moment?
It's for sure his most influential album. It's probably his most, I would maybe not important, but it's one of the most important albums, if not the most important album he's put out.
Mm.
But it's not, to me, my favorite. My favorite is Reloaded.
Okay.
Because to me, Reloaded, like, I think it was originally called Marsberg Reloaded. It's just like the Marsberg formula, but fine tuned and like polished up by Q-Tip and Alchemist, you know? So
yes.
It's just like that one's the one to me. But that's when like he went left, really. Like he said, okay, we're going to do the drumless shit, but this is the type of samples we could do now. Like we could do all of this stuff, just like just a empty bass line with like a girl howling over it, you know, like. that was the one. But to me, like on Marsberg, though, moments like the second verse on Raw Deal.
Oh, yeah, go in, bro.
Yeah, man, that one. That, like, to me, that verse is like when he says, "My shit is ringing like 2 for 5s, or you could get your odor supersized."
Yeah.
That verse to me is perfect hip hop.
Bro, I still don't know who Earl Boykins is. Like he shouts him out on that track somewhere. I was like, Earl Boykins is such a weird name, and I've never looked it up. I don't know who that is. I'm sure listeners will be hitting me up on who it is. But like, there's moments on this, like I would say Raw Deal is great. I mean, we just split it up into segments a little bit. So we have like Hidden Gems, which we feel like this album might be a bit hard to do because there's so many of these tracks are well known, I would have thought, but maybe not to a 90s audience. So maybe it's quite good if you could think of some hidden gems where you feel like they need a bit more shine, or just the most rewindables, like the track that you just can't stop rewinding. I mean, have you got any for those categories, like generally?
That's Raw Deal to me. Like while I was listening to this, like to the album recently, like I had to pull that verse back so many times, man. That shit was just like, We Do It comes on right after, and I don't know, I was just hypnotized, man. Like I had to bring it back every time We Do It would start. I would just bring it back for the second verse.
Yeah.
And the way it goes into We Do It with Ka, like even We Do It is just a crazy song. But that whole pocket, because like to me, it's like the album starts off with the no drums, but there's still like, it's no added drums. Or if the drums are added, it doesn't sound like they're added at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so banging though, but everything sounds so organic and together, and all the beat sounds like it's one thing, but it's banging, it's like loud drums and everything.
Yeah.
But then we get into a pocket of the album with like Panic and the Snow and Jungle Fever, where you get into more boom bap joints too.
Yeah.
And then like peppered through those, there's still some of the drumless joints. Like the whole album, like to me, is just like the Marsberg song at the end, like his verse that he does on the phone, that verse is crazy.
He phones that in. That's so weird. Exactly. I didn't get that. I was like, but I don't know if it is actually him on the phone or if it's his mic or what. But like, yeah, man, they smashed that. But it's got these concept tracks as well, like you said there with, you know, Jungle Fever. I didn't know much about like that being a coke track till it took me a minute. It took me a minute to get there. Yo, yo, yo. Just interrupting this episode to give you a quick update on our plans for 2021. But before I do, just remember to subscribe on YouTube and like this video. Also, get involved in the comments. We always have some dope takes on there. So shout out to people that are getting involved. We love reading them. And hopefully some more of you guys can get on there and we'll shout you out on the episodes coming up. Now, on to 2021. We here at Crate 808 are setting up a Patreon where for the price of a pint or a coffee every month, we'll be bringing you even more dope hip-hop episodes. Simply go to create808.com, subscribe to the newsletter, you'll get all the updates on our plans. But as a taster, each month we're thinking of bringing you 90s rap hidden gem album reviews that you can vote for. So if you enjoy people like Master Ace, Diamond D, The Lynch Mob, Paris, Big Noid, Blase Blase, we'll be doing a lot more of those. We're going to do our Why I Love series, the MF Doom and J Dilla editions. Each month we'll bring on a guest and dig into why they love a certain Doom or JD track, and then test that love. How deep is that love? Next up, Wu-Tang Chronicles Ghostface Killer Edition. We're aiming here, I don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but we're aiming to go through every solo Wu project, and we're going to start with Ghostface catalogue. So we're going to go in, we're going to talk about the music, we're going to talk about the fashion sense, and just some of the amazing bars he's dropped in that career. And the Griselda Marathon, I want to do it, I want to do it. If we get enough patrons, we're going to do it. We're going to go through every single Griselda project, and really, let's dive in, yeah? So get involved, hit up create808.com, subscribe to the newsletter, as well as the YouTube and the podcast. Now, back to the episode. I was going to actually say, with the car, the We Do It, I got some notes here. I got to go into We Do It because, like, you know, I'm enjoying Car anyway. Clearly one of the most rewindable tracks. Also, a track I don't actually hear a lot about. That sounds a lot like Wu. It revitalized that New York sound for sure. This whole thing did. But, like, I think what the whole album does brilliantly, it's got balance to this album, yeah? It's nodding to the golden era. Like you said, boom bap joints. There's that golden era to it. But it's somehow taking that and just twisting it and making it sound so fresh and new and so grimy that I think when he got to Reloaded, he was almost so confident. Reloaded sounds more confident to me, where he's like, oh, by the way, I can do that, and this is just more plush. Man, just you brought We Do It up, and I was just thinking about that, and I thought the bars alone, there was... What was that bar now about gigolo wardrobe and then like throwing bosses off the four-story homes and stuff like that? All that bit is just like, Rock, what are you on, bro?
I know. But to me, also a joint that I just thought of that I can't stop bringing back when it plays is Thug's Prayer.
Yes.
That one to me, because that to me, that's like, because it's how he committed to the like loops on this album. Like, you would hear maybe, because if you take out, let's say, all the drumless beats, you still have like an EP of like boom bap joints on it, right?
Yeah.
If it would have been organized in a different way, like, because we've heard tons of albums that like Supreme Clientele that'll start off with like two, like, you know, with one drumless joint and have another drumless joint later in the track list and everything. But this is just like how he flipped the balance of that. Like, no, the majority of the joints are going to be drumless and the minority are going to have drums. Mm. So you still get what you want. And you can then like through that come into the drumless sound if you're not used to that.
Absolutely. Okay? Yeah. No, that's very true. Actually, I didn't think about it that way. It's just a genius level of like just undertaking. You go into something like, well, we've got to talk about Snow. People bang on about Snow so much, but for rightly so. But like, I was looking at Riding Around and thinking that Mob Deep DNA is right there in Riding Around. And plus the versus Peon to get peed on quick, you know, the double threat of Rock Marciano for his whole album is crazy anyway. You go into Riding Around, which is menacing, and then Panic. And I was thinking, this is the most menacing stuff, like Onyx, DMX, menacing. You know what I mean? Like, you can get cinematic hip hop, but this is like grindhouse hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, it's like
Panic. Panic was one of the songs when I first heard the album, because like when I first heard the album, I strayed away from the boom bap songs. I remember I would just listen to the songs that didn't have drums because I was just amazed by how many there were and how good they were and how crazy the samples were. Mm-hmm. And how I'd never heard any of these samples before. Also, that was another huge thing about it, because by that time it felt like people will ask me like, oh, will you ever run out of samples to find and stuff? And like, you know, like anybody who digs knows that you'll never run out.
Yeah.
But by the end of the 2010s, it kind of felt like we might. It kind of felt like just hip hop in general was running out, because loop diggers weren't at the forefront of like the producing game anymore, but samples were still being used. But it was the same samples you would hear 100 times before. Like, I remember French Montana back then in like 2012, he was coming with like old, like Lord of the Underground samples and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was just, everything was getting reused and rehashed. And I don't know, man, the album just felt so fresh for that point too, just how all these samples, I'd never heard them. And the sample on Panic, it's like, I don't even know what, like, just the imagination of using that and how he placed it, like, clunk, 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 clunk. Like,
yeah, yeah. Like, how is, yeah, it just must feel good as a producer. I just can't imagine the feeling when you nail it. You know, when you just think, fuck, I've just smashed that. You know, like, there's no denying it. It's when your head is just doing that, you know. And like, Pop, For instance, when I hear pop and the Blaxploitation skits are fucking amazing. Like, again, another thing that worked from the 90s so well in this record is that addition. And I don't skip them. You know, those little inserts from Blaxploitation films, you want to just binge mode on those things. But like pop, it's spaced out, really spaced out for me, like a spacey kind of track he sampled. But then it just made me think, you know what? If they ever remade King of New York with Chris Walken, use this. This is the track you should be using, yeah? Because, man, that again, it's pretty unreal how good he is at that. And I was reading something, actually. I don't know if you knew this, but like Axl Rose was in that session. Did you know that?
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Like they were mixing down or something pop. I was reading like that, you know, there's very few interviews with him on this album, but you can find a few when they were saying like during the mixing session, he had one of his boys came in who knew Axl Rose, who's performing that day. And he was just sitting there while they're mixing down pop. And I'm like, what would Axl Rose be doing? Like, yeah, that's banging.
That's crazy. That's cool. I would have thought it would have been like a Steve Rifkin connection because it was like on Steve Rifkin's label, but
yeah, maybe actually. I was going to actually say to you as well about the drumless sound you were there talking about, because obviously it's prevalent in your work as well. One of the things I was thinking is, as a producer, what do you think are the big benefits? Because just to give you full clarity on a lot of our listeners, either don't like that sound completely or find it very repetitive, doesn't evolve, it hasn't evolved for a long time. I would just like to hear your thoughts on those things, but also like, what do you think are the benefits when you're playing a loop when it doesn't have a drum to when it does have a drum? Like what's your thinking there?
I don't really see a benefit between no drums or having drums. Like as far as when I'm making a beat, me, it's just, I'm doing whatever the sample tells me to do. And now I'll do more drumless beats, but I would have done that forever if I knew like people were actually going to rap on them one day. Basically, like I said, like we had Donuts before there was an album like that, you know, no drums, no people really rapping on it. I can't imagine people like ever wanting to rap on those, but like when I would hear it, it would be my favorite thing. And I kind of realized when Marciano came through, because Rock's like one of my favorite rappers. He's top 10 ever since I discovered him. Mm. Like I knew about him during like Flip Mode era. But since he started putting out Marsburg, that's when to me it rose to like top 10 status for me. And when I heard him rapping like that on those beats, it made me understand that those beats just showcase the rapper. Like if you have a rapper that's not that lyrical or no, doesn't use the musicality of his flow as much as another one would, or doesn't have like the craziest syllables or alliterations or assonances or anything like that, you would probably want to put him on a beat with drums to balance it out. But the thing is, to me, a guy like Mach Hami, a guy like Rock Marciano, West Side Gunn or Ransom or Ka or anybody like that, it's like when you have these beats, it just puts the rapper in the forefront. And just as much as I was saying before, they give all the value to the loop digging. For the rapper, it puts all the value. It puts all the value of his rap to the forefront. You can't be a shitty rapper and rap on those beats because people will see that you're a shitty rapper.
Yeah.
But if you're on a big beat and you're a shitty rapper, people will still probably like it. If you're on a crazy, like super, like crazy beat that you can listen to instrumentally and you still love it and everything. Mm. Like my beats aren't made to be listened to instrumentally. That's why I kind of stopped putting out beat tapes ever since I linked up with rappers.
Right.
Because I don't really want, I only put my beats out there for people to buy them really. Mm-mm. But I want people to rap on my beats. To me, I'm not making beats to be a beat maker, like recognized as like the greatest beat maker or whatever, like none of that. I want to be a producer that produced some of the best rap songs. And the rap is the most important part of any hip hop song to me. Wow. It's all about the rap. The rap is what should be promoted, pushed to the forefront. I'll listen to the most terrible beat in the world if the guy on it is rapping as well as Marciano on Raw Deal. You know what I mean? It's like, you'll listen to tons of rappers in the mixtape era that I would love, like Styles P or like, you know, Max B or whatever, you know, on the list of the tracks, like on the track list of the mixtape, there would be a bunch of reused beats that I wouldn't like probably, you know, they'll use like like some beat that I wouldn't have liked the song originally, Dem Franchise Boys song or something like that.
Right, right.
And then like Styles P would rap on it or something like that, or even Lil Wayne back then. And then I would be like, okay, I love this song now. To me, the beat doesn't matter. It's the rap. Like to me, rappers come to me for those drumless beats. You get what me and Ransom did last year, you know? Unreal. Like he just, like to me, that's the thing. It's like rappers want these. This is the, like, this is basically the essence. Like, we used to just have the two turntables, you know, no drum machine and everything. And I'm not saying you have to be a purist and there's a way that you have to make your beats or anything like that. But it's just like, if they want to rap on something mellow and that's what's going to bring the most craziest bars out of them, I'm going to give them a mellow drumless beat. You know, it might be raw, it might be whatever, but to me, and also makes me think of Wu-Tang. It brings me back to Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
And also to me, something I've said often is that when I discovered Marciano, I was working the most I had ever worked in my life. I was doing like I was working seasonal shifts at a warehouse. And it was like, I would, one time I did like 29 days straight, like no weekends, 12 hours a day, you know, like I would just be working my ass off. And when I would get home, you know, before that, I would probably put on like New Jack City by M.O.P. or I would put on, you know, Jerry with the Damage album, or I would put on anything, man. I would put on Screwball. Like, I love the 90s, you know, I listened to shit in the 90s. You know? I would listen to Riding and Dirty by UGK, anything. But after I started working and I would come home tired and all I would want to do is just sit in the couch, smoke, or like take a bath or something. That's when I discovered this stuff, and this stuff sounded like lounge music. Like I would just, I could listen to it. My neighbors wouldn't knock on my, walls. Like, cause I was playing it at 1 a.m. Like there's a whole, like, to me, there's like a grown-up status to that thing. And not to say like, you're not a grown up if you like boom bap beats or whatever, like not to say anything like that, but in itself, it's, you listen to that type of music, it's almost just like listening to soul or jazz music or anything like that. And I like jazz music and soul music. And some people want there to be like a clear separation between the timbre of the timbre of jazz and soul music and the timbre of hip hop music. But to me, like, I don't know, man, I listen to so much soul and jazz that to me, it's just amazing if a rapper can jump into that world and you don't need big banging drums.
No, really fascinating. Everything you said there has really got me thinking lots of different things, especially when you say something like it's more mature. And that's such a good point. I think that's why I really gravitate towards his sound, because something like Snow is a banger. Like I can imagine that coming on with the right audience in the right club, that's going to pop off. You're probably going to get a little bit thugged out, let's go. But at the same time, I can listen to it at home and it's not like I'm having to listen to rah rah. But Snow has that where, especially the remix with Sean P, you got that, oh okay, I can just bump bada bump, like, you know, you can just be at home. So I feel like it has that, again, balance in this record, man. There's a ton of it.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee! My name is Bobito Garcia, aka Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Evie Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast, real hip hop.
That's really interesting you're saying there about, because I think that's why Rock said he didn't want to use any drums, is to showcase his talent. Because the arguments I have every day, and when I'm fending for my corner, it's always like, yeah, but you like it because of the sample. And that's their argument, which is...
That's the whole point to me. To me, it's just to find the craziest sample. That's the whole job. So
yeah.
Like, I was only adding drums because I felt I had to, because I would just listen to Premiere, you know? But like, now that I don't have to put drums, it's just all about what's the craziest sample you can find. Like, that's why, like, when people are just doing the drumless sound just to do it, sometimes the sample isn't that good or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I just, like, right there, it's like, to me, that's the thing about it too. It's like, it's a challenge when you're doing the drumless sound too, because some people will think it's easier to pull off, but I think it's harder to pull off, because at the end of the day, it's like, you can't use a sample everybody's heard before.
Yeah.
You got to find something new. Like, you got to, that's the whole point. Like, you can at the end of the day, but anybody who's a real hip hop head is going to call you out, or is going to like the song less because he's heard it already. It's just, it's like, there's a level of like, the margin of error is bigger.
Because you might have heard all the jazz, all the rock riffs, all the, you know, all the stuff that blues, soul. But when you do find something new, and I know in a world where you've released a lot of music and there's probably a lot of stuff people want to talk to you about, but can I just say, right, I actually felt like, hold on, do I like French music now? Because when I listen to Au Revoir Francois and is it Jeudi Francois EPs, those two that you brought out, you hear, I've heard samples for all my life listening to music, but that, when I'm hearing that, that shit like touches your soul, bro. Like, do you know what I mean? And like, just the way you made those, I would beg, get everyone, YouTube, we'll put it in the description, check those out, because Nicholas, man, you smashed that. How did those EPs come about? Like, what was going on with you at that time, man?
Basically, every song on, because it's three tapes. I don't know if you heard the first one, Jeudi en France. Oh yeah, you heard Jeudi Françoise. Mm-hmm. Then there's Lendemain Françoise, and then there's Au Revoir Françoise.
So I've heard Au Revoir. I haven't heard Lendemain. Lendemain? Yeah.
Lendemain is pretty good too. Basically, all of those albums are all samples of Françoise Hardy. It's right. All one singer, all the albums. Mm-hmm. And I got her discography basically one day. It was like, I remember it was August 2014. Mm-hmm. I got her whole discography. I just cooped up in my apartment for like 3 days. Like, this was back when I was still working seasonal. I wasn't making that much money. Mm. And I just had time to make beats. That's all I would do. And when I found that, I fell into like a trance for like 3 days. I didn't leave the studio that's like in my house. Mm. And I was just smoking, listening to every one of, like, I got like 30 albums of hers. Yeah. And I listened to every album in chronological order. And as soon as I hit something to sample, I would just go and sample it. And then I would finish the beat. Okay, next song, next song, next song. Okay, here's a sample. Go sample it. No. And that's how I did Jeudi Françoise. Because I probably did for Jeudi Françoise like 50 beats in those 3 days. And I only used 14. Mm-hmm. So then I had a whole bunch left over. And the majority of Au Revoir Françoise and Lendemain Françoise were made in that 3 days.
Wow.
And I just released them years later, but I probably added a few new beats to each one of them too. But it all started from that August, those 3 days in August.
Damn. Would they ever be reworked or something, do you think? Like for someone to spit over? I mean, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to work with that, but yeah.
I would love to. I do have a Rock Marciano remix on the first one, and people think it's a real song, but it's not a real song. It's just a remix of like a kind of unknown track of his.
Ah, interesting. Because it makes me think, when I heard that, I'm a massive Madlib fan as well. And hearing Madlib go to places like Brazil and India, like being from Indian heritage, I was in the car with my Gujarati father-in-law in the back, listening to the Beat Conductor India tape, thinking, I might get away with this. I might get away with this. There's no swearing. I'll be all right, I think. And he was just in the back and he was like, this is great. Well, who is this? I was like, brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a 60-year-old immigrant father of mine, father-in-law, who's like listening to Madlib, enjoying it. But this is what I'm saying with yourself. Has there been any like countries where you haven't dipped your toe in, but you want to like to kind of work the music into sampling?
Oh, definitely. Basically every country. Like I haven't done it in a while, but I used to go through a lot of phases like, okay, I'm going to study Iranian music. Okay, I'm going to study Lebanese music. Okay, wow. Algerian music. Okay, French music. Okay, I would go, like, those are basically, like, I haven't gone too deep into Spanish music yet. And that's one thing Marciano told me that I'm lacking on, that I haven't dug enough into, like, Latin music and Spanish music and Brazilian music and all that type of stuff. He's telling me that's where it's at right now. But maybe I should have said that. But anyways, like I haven't really like gotten into it too much, but I did a lot of Arab countries though.
Interesting.
I feel they're kind of untapped.
Nice. Because when you think about your sound, and you have a sound now, I feel like you've established yourself enough to know that's the Craven sound. I can pretty much spot it when I hear your Navy Blue or something like that. I'm like, that sounds like Shrines, Tubby. Man, when I heard King Tubby, I kind of thought that sounds like, oh, it is. Oh, right. So how did you land on that? Like, how did you know, okay, this is the one that's really gonna, you just thought this is the one?
Well, basically, thank you for that. I appreciate that. And the funny thing about King Tubby is that that's literally like, there's a technique I use in that beat. That I thought I discovered when I did it.
Yeah.
Like I started doing that because I'm not really going to say what it is, but I started doing it like 2016, like the La Prière beat with Makami.
Makami, yeah.
Those are done the same way. They have the same like technique that I used on both of them. I have a couple more of those, but basically those, like, they sound kind of hollow and the voice is kind of distant and everything. Basically, like, it's a technique that I found, and when I found it, I was so happy. I was like, okay, this is my sound.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And then Marciano hit me up and started telling me he was doing that. And I was like, oh shit, okay. And I just didn't And then he told me what song that he did it on. And I was like, oh, and then I heard that. And I was like, oh, okay, wow. Okay, yeah.
But it's interesting how you both kind of merged into that kind of field. It's brilliant. Yeah.
He does it a different way than me, though. I do it like kind of a manual way. He uses a program to do what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So him, it has a slightly different sound. I like the way mine sound because I've got my own little like manual way of doing it. Yeah, it's really great, because also basically what it does is it permits me to sample parts of songs that nobody's ever sampled before, because there was like too much going on in a way. And like I found a way to like tone certain things down.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I wanted just to mention before. Another really cool thing for loop diggers, as far as this new sound that people don't like necessarily, is that it permits us to sample things that people have never sampled before. Like parts of songs that have been sampled, parts of those songs that nobody's touched before because there was something going on, or there was too many drums on it, or something like that. Or there was a weird drum pattern that you can really layer with a boom bap beat. Yeah. Like just think of on Reloaded, Marciano's song, I Shot the King. Imagine putting boom bap beats on that. It wouldn't really work.
Yeah. So it gives you license to kind of, well, it's a new sound then, right? It's like a whole new.
It opens up all these new untapped possibilities.
Fascinating. Basically. Yeah. No, really interesting that you were saying that. I mean, you're talking there about your samples. Are you talking there a bit about Matt Comey as well on Craven N2, which I feel like it's probably one of my favorite projects that you've done. Gyre, the one with Gaia. Sorry, Gaia, man. That track, man, that kind of stuff with Billy Woods is, it just moves me. And when I hear Gildan, is it Gildan? Gildan? Those tracks are just are very much your sound, but also like, shit, like, I can't stop rewinding that. And the outro beat to Gildan, mate. What is that?
Really, like the Gildan beat, I made that, and that's a like kind of a boom bap beat if you really listen to it. Like,
it is, it's got
hats and hi-hats and snares and everything. And I made that beat like 2018.
Yeah.
And I got Shah Hef on it. And once I had Shah Hef on it, I was like, honestly, like, I wanted to add stuff to the album, but I didn't really want to add filler or anything, but I wanted to add little interludes to just make the album a bit longer. So I just had that in mind for like the last like 6 months of me like working on the record. And basically, as soon as I found that beat and I made it, I was like, oh man, I have to put this on my album. I don't even want to try to get somebody to rap on this. I love this beat so much. Let me just put it as an interlude. Fuck it. Like, to me, that, because to me, you know, that's P Rock and CL Smooth, Mecca and the Soul Brother.
Yes.
That's J Lib Champion sound. Like, yes. You know, putting those, like, to me, I love that. So,
but do you know what it is, right? It kills me when I hear Primo did it loads as well back in the day. He'd do like just bits where he'll do like just 20 seconds and that's it. And you're like, where is that sound again? And it's so fleeting. Jay Dilla, he did it all the time. Like, he just said that with Jay Lib and stuff like that. There's something about it. I just want to kind of collect them all and put them all in one collection where I can be like, yeah, this is the shit right here.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier, and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate. You know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig. That's how we play. And that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out here.
But yeah, man, I had to big you up on those anyway. But you talked about CL Smooth and Pete Rock, and that really brings to mind what I was going to say next, man, because your relationship with someone like Ransom makes me think of someone like Pete Rock and CL Smooth.
Thank you.
It feels like there's a sound and a rapper that are just made for each other. And when I hear that, I'm like, wow, like, just rap over this forever. You know what I mean? Like, what? Tell me about that relationship with Ransom, man.
That was a blessing, honestly. Mm. Like, I put out the Valentin Rizzuto album with Ito in 2018, and Ito and Ransom have been tight for a decade and more. Because of that album with Ito, Dark Low hit me up to make music, and then a week later, Ransom hit me up to make music.
Oh,
so
wow.
I got like two of my favorite. Like, I was a huge Dark Low fan. Mm-mm. I liked Ransom, but I didn't know a lot about Ransom. I just, some of my really good friends that I make a lot of music with in Montreal, like, they're two brothers, and their favorite artist is Ransom. Like, he's like top three to them forever. Wow. Hardhood, Classic Days, all of that, the 18 days, like, they put me on. I knew about Ransom a little bit from, like, you know, the Professional, DJ Clue and all that, but they really showed me how crazy he was, and the Stack Bundles, Rest in Peace, collaborations and everything. Yeah, man, when he reached out to me, it was just like, I was just so happy because on Pinata by Madlib and Freddie Gibbs, they put out the Knicks single. And on the Knicks single, there's a remix with Joey Badass, Action Bronson, and Ransom.
Yeah.
So you have an official Ransom Madlib song out, right?
Yeah.
No drums. And I heard that and I remember, I was like, this is amazing. Like, to me, that was like the Ransom song that blew my mind when I heard it. So when he reached out to me, like, I was already pretty seasoned, like, into it, on his stuff. But like, when we started working is when I became like a fan, like a super fan of his stuff. Like, after he reached out, basically reached out, like I said, 2018, and we just started going back and forth. Finally, in March 2019, I paid him for a song, put that out. He was retired at the time and people hadn't really heard a solo song from him in years.
Yeah.
So when they heard that, people went so crazy. He loved the reception. So he hit me. He said, fuck it, let's just make a little project. So 2019, we worked on a project all year. We kind of scrapped the project. And then at the end of 2019, we started doing some more songs. And in a few months, we had what would be known as Director's Cut.
Wow.
And then from there, after the reception off of that, like, his shit was just went crazy. Like, his numbers just went crazy. He hadn't had that kind of reception off a project for like in a while, at least not in like this climate, at least I don't think.
Yeah.
And after that, he's just, you know, I don't want to speak for him or anything, but after that, he was just so motivated. The momentum, he just had to keep it going. So he was like, yo, let's put out another one.
Yeah.
So March 9th, we put out the first one, put out the first one March 9th. Then we came back April 24th, like a month and a half later. And we came out with the third one, August 14th.
Wow.
And it was just like, he was just, you know, just send me beats. And he was just going crazy, sending me songs every other day. It was just exhilarating. Honestly, the year went by so fast. Like, I was just making as many beats as possible and sending them over to him. Like, I would send packs of like 50 beats and over, like every few days.
Damn, you in the zone.
Yeah, it was a great zone, man. And we're not, you know, we're not letting up. Like, we got more songs coming right like in a few weeks.
Wicked. So it is interesting when you say that, like, prolific, man. I love a beat switch like the next man, but I remember just hearing this Director Cut series, all of them, and like Pulp Fiction, stuff like that, just the way the beat just keeps changing. People who know, but Ransom isn't just a normal rapper to me, as in, it's just not your usual. He says some shit. There's some grown man talk on here. Like, there's some actual stories where I'm like, oh, and you know, there's been a lot of shit happening in 2020, man. Like the George Floyd stuff, everything, the Black Lives Matter movement. Ransom was bringing that as much as Killer Mike, as much as other people were doing it as well. I'd hear something like Hereditary or, you know, stuff like that, and I'd be like, wow. And then you guys are going off and like using Hellraiser, man. I heard that. I laughed out loud when I heard that. Have you done this before? Many, many times. I remember that film, man. That's my film. Oh, how you landed on stuff like Hellraiser for skits like that, man?
Well, basically, like, to go back to what we were saying before about like not wanting to be necessarily just a beat maker, but also wanting to be a producer. Mm-mm. Like, I also like being a beat maker, don't get me wrong, because if I can find like the right producer to produce like an album or something, like, then my beats, I know how to make them fit. And basically, Ransom produced all of the projects. I made the beats. Like, I kind of took more of a hand in deleted scenes, but all the projects apart from deleted scenes are 100% executive produced by Ransom.
Right.
All the ideas, everything. My only role was giving him these beats and giving him these open, like, I was giving him beats with drums too, but he wasn't taking them. He was going for the drumless beats and eventually said, we're going for the drumless sound. Like, just like, you know, well, I don't know if he actually told me or if I just figured it out, but basically I understood that for the director's cut series, he wanted to have the drumless sound. And then when we did crime scenes, that's when we added like boom bap and stuff like that.
Yes.
But yeah, he had a vision for the sound of the album, for the name of the album, for the track list being all like movie titles, for the skits, like all of that was him. Even Pulp Fiction, he took three of my beats, three different MP3s I sent him, and put them together himself.
Right.
He had rapped on a fourth beat that nobody's heard, that like that was the original, like he sent me like that like a year before, and it was the first verse to Pulp Fiction on a different beat. And then when I heard Pulp Fiction, I heard the first verse on a new beat. And I was like, oh, cool. He used a different beat with the same verse. And then I heard the beat switch with a new verse. And then I heard another beat switch with like a huge, crazy verse. And that last beat is a boom bap beat, though, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's two beats on the whole series that have programmed drums. And that's the last beat on Pulp Fiction and the second beat on, the last beat on Inception, which has not trap pattern, but like a Dirty South pattern. Like, so that was all his idea too, in a way. Like, you know, like none of the songs start with like drums. It's all like, if there is drums, it's going to build up to there. And it's all Rand, man. It's like he had even this idea of using me as a producer. Like he reached out to me. Everything was planned by him. He heard my sound, and I guess he just like had the idea. Like I did like get the Reaper's Hood out. Like I'm the one that produced that whole song and that whole single and everything. Like that was mine. And I guess like that's what really motivated him to really commit to this idea he had. And look what he did. And like the plans we have for like the future is just like we're still gonna put out like music, you know, but like we're gonna try to just like branch off. Like now we've got like the new album coming out. Which I only like, you know, there's 7 producers on the whole album. We're like sharing the production, but it's like me and Ransom are a team though. Like everything we're planning together, like coming up is just, you guys are going to see.
Wicked.
But our 2020 though is like, it's for the books though.
Yeah, man, definitely. Would you say, what is the new project then? Drop a bit of that. Like when's it coming? What's it called? What can we look forward to?
New project's called Seven. Oh. It's based off the 7 Deadly Sins. And basically it's called like the movie Seven, you know, with the 7 ideas.
Wicked.
And I'm producing on it. Choop is producing on it. You've probably heard him with the Ribs and the Cloth and Benny. Lord Sear is producing on it.
Nice.
Don is producing on it. 38 Special is producing on it.
Damn.
Ransom's producing on it. And am I forgetting? Did I say me? Did I mention my?
And yourself, yeah.
7.
This is going to be different then. This is going to be a bit of a switch up.
And there's going to be some features on here that people are going to go crazy for.
Nice. Well, I was going to say, talking of features, I heard you had Stove God on Crime Scenes on Good Time. I'm a big Stove God fan anyway. I'm ready for this guy to blow. I'm waiting to see, is there any potential with you and Stove maybe doing some more stuff?
Oh man, I would love to, like honestly. And since like basically like I'm not gonna get into details, but I've been in talks with people for more Stove God and Craven, so it should happen. I'm not gonna confirm anything, like nothing's like actually like the wheels haven't been put in motion yet, but there has been talks of wheels being put into motion for certain things. So
man, that I'm here for all of that, because if I look at your just discogs and like just who you've worked with, it just marries up to like some of my favorite rappers right now, and I'm sure you've heard this a lot anyway. So I just wanted to ask you generally, instead of like digging into all these different tracks, is more like what do you think each one of these guys is kind of bringing? Maybe I mean Mac Homie right up there. Navy Blue for me is right up there as well. Those two guys, and we've talked about Stove as well. I mean, Where are you at with those guys? How do you think they're going to change like hip hop stuff, like Seabass that you're making for Navy and Back to Basics, and you know, where what differs from those guys when you're working with them?
Basically, to me, if we're going to talk about Mach, Navy, and Stove God, Mach to me is just state of the art rapping. He's another one that uses all of the code and the ethics of like, you know, all the hip hop we love, but just such in a new and current and revamped and international and like knowledgeable way. Like there's so much knowledge and references, and Mach is just to me the accumulation of like everything in hip hop to this day. Like he's just like, he can have not existed in any other time. Like his style is purely of the now. He's to me like that guy that does it exactly the way we like it, but you can't call him old school. Not to say that about anybody else either, but it's just Mach to me, that's his strong point. Yeah, it's just,
love that.
It's so cutting edge what he comes up with. It's so new. The images he pulls from are just so new. Like Ransom, his stuff he says is completely new also, but Ransom is just more of just like, you know, he's less like extraterrestrial, like, you know, like abstract than Mach. Ran, you know what he's talking about, you know, there's like, you can relate to Ran easier in a way, but Mach is just like, just abstract painting, like with its raps. So that's why I love Mach. Dude like Navy is like, you know, I come from the 50 Cent era. So like the Jim Jones era and all that. So like to be so vulnerable in rap, be so personal without having to be like, you know, like braggadocio and all that, like is, and you know, Navy might slip in like some really confident bars about how good he is at rapping and stuff like that in his raps, but he still comes with these emotions and these experiences and these like memories and stuff. It's just, yo, like Navy to me is just one. He's one of the most spiritual artists I've worked with, probably. Like to me, like his stuff, like even if he doesn't really address like spiritual stuff all the time or explicitly or anything, like his stuff is spiritual. Like there's a spirit to his music that's just like beautiful. That's why, like, as soon as I started working with him, like I knew we were gonna do something crazy. He knew we were gonna do something crazy too. But yeah, man, the results are just like, they go way beyond my expectations, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
And like Stove God, to me, Stove God is like, I don't know anybody who takes the like turn up or like lit energy, like of like any new rapper, whether it's Uzi, whether it's Thug, whether it's, you know, anybody you want to think of, Future, even like anybody, even Migos, anybody, like his ad-libs and his energy and the melodies and the way he delivers and just like his charisma is just, he's like on one.
Yeah.
But then it's on drumless beats, you know? It's like, it's just on the craziest loops. Like, you know, the album Marcy produced for him is just...
Drought is just...
It's another level. Like, I had to get, you know, it took me a few listens to understand what was going on. But once I got it, it's just like, I can understand why people say it's album of the year.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say it's Director's Cut Scene 3. You want to say it's Reasonable Drought? I have no argument.
Well, give you a heads up. Director's Cut did make our five. Like, we would do it. Number three did make our five. Actually, which is your favorite? So number three is your favorite out of the Director's Cut series?
I think the best one is Crime Scenes.
Okay. Yeah.
As far as just like appeal, but Scene 3 is the painting. It's like, it's the Ransom says it's the Grammy winner. So it's the...
I like that. The artwork as well. For Scene 2, the artwork on that is just dope. Love that, man.
Shout out to Sep, sorry.
Oh, Sep. Oh, sorry. Who did the artwork?
For Scene 3, Deleted Scenes and Crime Scenes, it's Sep. For the first two covers, that's Ransom that got those done.
Okay.
You have to ask Ran about those. But for the vinyl versions of both, we had Sep do the vinyls also.
Big up.
As of every cover.
Wicked. I was just listening to Deep Water Blue with Navy earlier today, and I just feel like giving him a hug, man. You know, when you hear someone and you're just like, wow, like, come here, man, just come here, we'll be all right. But yeah, like you said, there is that vulnerability to his music, and I just can't wait to see where all of this is going to go. Like you said, there with 38 Spesh and just so many other people that there are going, and Shay Noir and people like that. I feel there's just so much beautiful things to come in this game, man.
Hey guys, this is Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest. You're listening to The Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, what's up, man? It's your man El Zai, and you're rocking with The Crate 808 Podcast. You know what I'm saying? Where you can check out, you know, artists like me.
Hey, it's Steve Rifkin from Loud Records. You're rocking with The Crate 808 Podcast. Spread the word. These guys are dope. The questions they ask and the interview is amazing. Enjoy yourself. Be safe and be healthy.
1212, you know what it is. It's your man SKYZOO, Sky Zoo, live out the borough. And this is The Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, share that love and put your peoples on.
Peace and light. This is Cy Rock, rocking with Crate 808 Podcast. And you want to check out everything hip hop on crate808.com.
Yo, this is Juggernaut, Nottingham City, NG area. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you keep it locked in. There's so many gems drop. Crate808.com.
Hey, yo, this is the one and only R.A., the Rugged Man. And I'm rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast with my man Cam. Yeah.
We were talking there about Marsberg earlier, by the way. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about 90s with you as well. For people who don't know, like, we talk about car, we talk about rock. The 90s thing with these guys, I know you probably do know this, but like on Pro Tools, Jizz's Pro Tools, you have rock and you have car, and there's your links to this kind of thing. And I do feel like you said Nutmeg earlier. I know you love Ghost. So I need to talk to you about Ghost. Why do you love Ghost so much? Why is Ghostface your go-to?
I would say the songs, because there's a lot of songs Ghost put out that I don't listen to as much as others, right? Like, okay. He's not the one, like, there's a certain rappers that I'll listen to a higher percentage of their catalog than Ghost. But Ghost is my favorite rapper, and he's always been my favorite rapper because he has, when he gets there, he has the most dense abstract street hip hop style that ever existed. The most identifiable, original, artistic. Like, to me, Ghost is like, I'm not going to, you know, go too crazy here, but he's just like, to me, like, I tell everybody, my holy trinity is Charles Aznavour, Jimi Hendrix, and Ghostface Killah. Like, that's, to me, like, these three guys, to me, have given me the most important music for me. I heard Ghost for the first time, like, you know, I found out about Wu-Tang when I was like 13. So we're talking like 2006.
Wow. Okay.
And that's when I started digging into 36 Chambers, and I heard Ghost on the Mystery of Chex Boxing with the ODB intro hyping him up, and like with the mask and everything. And I was like, wow. And like, I just knew about Raekwon really at the time and Wu-Tang. I didn't really know about the people in Wu-Tang. I knew Raekwon, Method Man, and Wu-Tang. I started going into Wu-Tang. That's when I found out about Ghost. Then my friend's big brother, who taught me how to make beats, gave me the Pretty Tony album. And we had the Def Jam game with the, like, fight with Ghost and everything.
Sweet.
And like, as soon as I really listened to Pretty Tony album, which isn't even one of the best Ghost albums, as soon as I heard that, I just never thought rap could be that.
Wow.
Like, I had heard a bit of MF Doom and I heard a bit of Raekwon, and I love Ray too. Like, Ray is like top 15 for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Ghost just has that style, like the Ray style, but just so much like charisma and the storytelling. And I don't know, man, you can't like, everybody knows why Ghost is crazy. Like, anybody who Ghost, to me, like, you understand what's the appeal. I like abstract comedy, you know. I like Adult Swim, I like Monty Python, you know, stuff like that. So it's like the non sequiturs, the abstract comedy, the weird comedy, like Keisha's house on Pretty Tony, that he's just like talking about, he's got to, like, he keeps going to the bathroom because of the fried chicken and waiting for the Mike Tyson fight, and he's looking at this girl and he wants to fuck her, so he goes to fuck his girlfriend and like cancels the fight.
Like,
Ghost just has everything, you know. And then when I heard Fishscale, like, because I was like, I listened to Pretty Tony and Fishscale before Iron Man and Supreme Clientele, because that was just my era, right?
Yeah,
when he gave me Pretty Tony, I went and checked for the new Ghostface album, and it was Fishscale. So then I heard Shaky Dog.
Shaky Dog's
my favorite story, like, crime story song ever. And I heard, then, like, because it's just like, you got Shaky Dog, then you got Kilo, then you got like 9 Milli Brothers with the Doom beat. Dude. And you have like Beauty Jackson and that album, to me. Then you got Whip You With a Strap, and there's all the drumless beats on that too, like all the Dilla beats from Donuts, right? Whip You With a Strap is from Donuts.
Yeah.
Beauty Jackson is from Donuts.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know, man. That album, to me, when I heard that, it just, that's like helped me just cement my idea of, okay, I'm going to make hip hop beats. That's going to be my life now.
Shit.
And just like, yeah, man. Ghost is probably like, because I remember even the first beat I ever did, the sample I used was the horns at the beginning of Cunt to Fly Shit on Pretty Tony album.
Oh.
Yeah, there's like horns at the beginning of like, dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
It's just a beautiful thing to see someone like yourself getting into these late Ghost projects, when someone like myself was sitting Iron Man and just being like, this is the best thing. You know, when I was going to say, if there was a project then, just interesting to me what you would say, if you could have worked with him on, like, in his history, is it Pretty Trony then, when you would like to have had something on that? I don't know if your sound would have worked, but like, if you had the chance,
what,
maybe.
What era Ghost I would have preferred?
Or just what album, what project, what track?
Oh, so that I would have liked to produce? Anything on Supreme.
Because
Supreme is the one to me. Like, because to me, Fishscale is a different kind of Ghost. It's Ghost, Theodore Unit Ghost, you know? It's not American Cream Team Ghost, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like with like Lord Superb and everything, rest in peace.
Mm-mm.
To me, of course, the Lord Superb era Ghost was like, there's nothing else like it in music. But the Fishscale era Ghost is, to me, already so good that once I got to Supreme, I didn't even understand Supreme. I didn't even really like Supreme. It wasn't like, it wasn't like Fishscale. But then when I got it, because I liked Iron Man, but because even Iron Man's like a completely, it's like proto Ghost, you know?
Yeah, proto Ghost. Yeah.
To me, the Ghost that we like, the crazy like ultra Ghost, came on Wu-Tang Forever. Impossible, Cash Still Rules, all of that. Like, the Cash Still Rules verse by Ghost is top five Ghost verses to me, for sure.
Okay. I mean, this is interesting because I remember at the time it was like, especially when Supreme came out, you want to get on Supreme because just from my perspective in England as well, especially, you were hearing Woo slightly creaking at that time. Like there was a creak to like, you don't want to say it, like, oh man, we love Woo. And you, at that point, you were still bumping 36 at that point. So it wasn't like, you know, that old. It was still relevant. It was in your rotation, but it wasn't mine. And then when Supreme dropped, I remember the day I was at university. I remember getting the album, playing it in my room, in my dorm, and being like, oh, we're okay. We're good. We're good. This is what we need. And I'm wearing the Woo hoodie right now. And I'm like, this is what we need, man. It's just a great thing to hear from someone who's just from a different time and appreciating the same artist I could appreciate. And I feel like this is what hip hop's beautiful for, man. And I feel in 5, 6, 7 years time, I do feel people will go back to this time now. I don't know how you feel about this last 3, 4, 5 years, but it's consistently good. How many more years do we need?
My favorite hip hop era. For sure. This is my, like, the 90s, like, have always been my favorite era because, you know, you had Bucktown, the home of the original Gun Clappers and songs like that, you know, yeah. Like, but like, I don't know, man. Right now is just the oversaturation is kind of working. It's going like, there's so much good hip hop. It's crazy. Like, look, like, I know people are mad at the Grammy nominations, but just look at the Grammy nominations this year. It's just like, to me, because I was also born in the 2000s. So I've never really lived in an era that I was happy about, you know? Yeah. You know, like when I was in hip hop, like I was like, no, listen to Mad Villain. And people were all just bumping, you know, Rick Ross and Lil Wayne and Jim Jones. And,
true.
And I would listen to Cameron, like, cause I loved Cameron. Mm. And then I would go back to Mad Villain and be like, oh, what was I doing? I can't listen to him. He's going to corrupt my mind. You know, but like right now I have no qualms. Like, I feel like you, like, I love from like Young Thug to Rock Marciano, like everything to me. Like, I even like Lil Uzi Vert and like everybody. Like, I love it all right now. Like, it's like, it's the best, most varied like era. It's just, I don't know, man. It just, I'm just so happy. And the fact that I'm contributing to some music into it, like with some of my favorite artists, is just, that probably makes me biased a bit, but yeah, it's still my favorite.
Why not, man? You're there, you're in the eye of the storm, man. That's what we want. That's what we want to hear from, man. You know what I mean? Just tying it back to Marsburg then, was that idea that when we do talk about like albums on here, we used to talk about 90s albums. So we always think what non-90s rappers could have maybe made it onto this album. So let's flip it for Marsburg. Which 90s rappers would you have liked to hear heard on the album if you had the chance?
On Marsburg?
Mm.
Oh, okay. Well, Ghost.
yeah, I thought that.
Doom from like the late 90s, maybe?
Mm. Doom and Rock on a track.
Yeah, Rock said he wanted to work with Doom. Like, he did an interview with Forbes DVD. He said he wanted to do an album with Doom and an album with Cormega, he said.
Oh, Cormega would be sick as well. That's interesting. Because then you do have them tracks, don't you? You have the, Dilla beat with Biggie and Rock on there and Buster on there. So these things have happened. Oh, man, it would have been amazing. That would have been amazing. Can't remember what that track's called now.
I'll be honest, though. Like, I like that there's only Khan the album.
Yeah, me too.
Only Rock, like if it wasn't any features without Ka, that would have been fine. But I finally put, like, when you do an album with no features and you put one feature, it's got to be like an AZ on Life's a Bitch, or it's got to be like a Eminem on Renegade or something like that.
Yeah,
like, so Ka fills that role quality wise.
Although, wasn't one of his boys on Riding Around, or is that just me? Maybe he's just shouting in the back.
Yeah. You know, like,
that's his boys, isn't it? And they're not really pros. They're just like
the Hudson River. dump him in the Hudson River.
Like, yeah. Okay.
All right. I don't know if that counts.
Fair, man. Fair. No, but yeah, I feel you. I do like projects where, to be fair, at the moment, I'm loving collab projects. You're very much in there. Obviously, Madlib's doing that with Freddie as well and killing it. And Forte on the new one. Fucking crazy.
Yes, you're rocking with the best. This is the one and only Just Blaze. Right now you're checking out the Crate 808 podcast. Remember to hit up crate808.com, like, comment, subscribe, and all of that. Peace.
Nicholas, man, thank you for all of this. I just wonder if I could dip a little bit. I know I've taken up a lot of your time, but if you have just a few minutes more, I just want to hear a bit more about you, man. Like, as growing up, like getting into beats, I've not even really talked about that. Have you got some time?
Yeah, for sure. I've got as much time as you want. And I just wanted to mention also, like, when you talked about Pro Tools by GZA.
Yes.
I feel that album is literally like, I feel like GZA is responsible for a lot of this new era too. When you even think about, he's the first one to do a collab album with Muggs, you know, like.
Yes. Yes.
Like before, like him and Planet Asia were the two first ones. He was the first. But yeah. Then you got him and GZA, then you had him and Planet Asia, then you had him and Lil Bill, and then you got this flood of him and Makami, him and Ido, Rock Marciano, all these people from the new era. He's got one with Ido, he's putting out one with Rome Streets. That was something GZA started. And then you look at Pro Tools, which has Ka rhyming on our drumless Rock Marciano beat.
Yeah. And he gave him that track.
Like, right? Like,
he's just on that track on his own. It's crazy.
And GZA does that. Like, he let Killer Priest have a whole song on Liquid Swords, you know?
Yeah. So it's true.
It's like, oh, we like this so much. This is good as Killer Priest verse. You can have the whole song, you know?
That's mad.
Like, and it's the whole prelude to what's happening. Cause I heard Firehouse and I was just so thrown off back then. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
But then I heard it and I was like, no, this is amazing though. But like, I don't know who this rapper is. I have to have an image, you know? I live in the bling era.
Yeah.
You know?
It passed me by, bro, that track. Passed me by until I heard Grief Pedigree. And just going through your CDs, I was like, oh, what the fuck car's on here? I can't wait for someone. I hope we're documenting it a little bit now. But you know, when someone can really look back and, you know, you could look back in the '90s and be like, oh, that's when this was, you know, prevalent and these guys did it this way. I'm looking forward to these last 10, 15 years where people can go back and go, oh, this is where rock did this. And obviously you'll be in that, man. You'll be in that tapestry, bro. I was going to actually ask you, like, just growing up, you said there about Jimmy and the French singer. Who was that? Who was that?
Charlotte Level.
Yes. So, see, I've not heard of him, but like, I was thinking, when you were growing up, what was it about hip hop then? What was it about hip hop that, what did you get from this music that you couldn't really get from the other stuff you're listening to?
It was the creation side that attracted me the most. You know, I started taking music lessons and stuff as a kid, and I had a punk rock band in elementary school, and like, we used to like, of the school and everything, like no lyrics, it was just like instrumental songs, but we wrote the songs and everything.
What were they called? What were they called? The band.
The band was called Why Follow. It was like emo punk.
Why Follow? Love it. Love it. Yeah. Subliminals. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Go for it, man.
So I just loved the idea of making music, coming up with riffs, coming up with melodies, like just coming up with sounds, listening back to the music I made. Like I loved all of it. And the group kind of dissolved when we went into high school and my guitar teacher left the city. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, my friend's older brother, who gave me the Pretty Tony album, he also showed me how to make beats. And he showed me like MF Doom, and he showed me Raekwon's the Vatican mixtape, the Da Vinci Code. Mm-hmm. When I heard that, because I heard him making beats and like having this guy with him rapping over him, I didn't understand how he had flutes and drums and all these sounds in his beats, and he didn't have these instruments, and he explained to me it was sampling. So when I understood that you could do that, and you could use obscure music, that some music that's amazing, some music some people don't even like, and you can like retool it and reshape it into like something completely different for somebody to rap lyrics over, like that to me was, I didn't know hip-hop was made like that. Like, I don't know, probably at the time I thought Jay-Z made his own beats probably or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
You know, I only really knew about Jay-Z, Tupac, Eminem, 50 Cent, you know, that's probably Eazy-E. Like, that was the kind of like the repertoire of rappers, Snoop Dogg. Like, that's all I knew about as a kid. So when I learned about sampling and all that, like, I went crazy.
Yeah.
And then like, what's the difference on 2001? That's a Charles Aznavour sample.
Oh, really? Is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Yeah, did you clock it when you heard it?
I didn't know it was a Charles Aznavour sample, but I already love Charles Aznavour. I just didn't know the Charles Aznavour song they used. Wow. But then when I learned it was a Charles Aznavour song, then I learned that early. So like, that made me understand even more about sampling. Like, oh, I can go get Charles Aznavour music and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and that's when I started understanding, like, because I didn't know what to sample at first. I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what's the type of stuff you had to look for, or where you had to look for it, or what parts you needed, or like, You know, my friend's big brother, once again, Vincent, he told me once, like, you got to find samples that have no drums so you can add drums. You can't take shit that has drums, right? Because then you got to have to layer drums. So like, I would, like, that was one lesson. So I had to find more lessons. Mm-hmm. And then eventually through my style, I just figured, like, you got to listen to every single genre of music, and whatever I like in any song, I got to use. Right. If I like it and if I can make a beat with it, I got to use it. It's just whatever I like.
So right? The crux of your kind of love is the sampling, digging, finding the music and listening to the music. That's brilliant, man. I'd love to just sit here and just listen to that 3 days worth of music and just find stuff in it. That's amazing, man. Just going back then, you said you had a band. What was it as a kid that made you just want to perform that or express yourself through music? Can you remember, like, when you were like a kid and just being like, why was it? Your parents or your friends?
It was kind of my dad and my mom for sure. It was like, I always liked Jimmy, like when he started showing me like Jimi Hendrix and stuff like that. I remember I was like 8 years old. My dad like picked me up from like a camp or something, and he had like Jimi Hendrix Experience, Hendrix Greatest Hits that just came out. He just bought it at HMV or something. He was driving, and I was listening to this music, and I was just like, what is this? And I fell in love with it like instantly. And then I started getting into classic rock, like The Doors and Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, Frank Zappa, all this type of stuff. And he one day just like, I think we went somewhere and there was a guitar. I just picked up the guitar and started playing it. And I figured out a Blink-182 song. And when he saw that, like, he told me, if you do this thing, like, I had to do something, like, you know, I was fucking up something. And he told me, if you do this for like 2 months,
yeah,
I'll buy you an electric guitar. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was a good boy. He bought me the guitar. Wicked. And I made the band because I was just like, hey, I have a guitar. All I see is these guys are doing things on stages with guitars. I guess that's what I got to do. So like probably like 3 shows at school.
So you were making the music then, like you were making music. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because I'm a relatively new dad. I've got a 3-year-old, and it's fascinating them little things like getting a Jimi Hendrix CD can do to a young mind, right? And I find that it's a bit trippy because I'm always like, well, let's make sure I've got the best things around, because if he picks up like something shit, I'm going to be like, oh, fuck's sake, like, don't listen to that. This is this. And like, he's only 3, but he loves Bob Marley. Like, he'll find the Bob Marley CD, and I'd be like, right, at least we're on a right track now, right? But again, the beats I'm playing from N2 of yours, honestly, he's enjoying them. And that's weird. It's a weird thing where you're like, that little thing could lead to, so you don't know where it could lead.
My friend that I told you showed me Ransom, he's got, how old is he? I think he's 8 now. He's got a 4-year-old or 5-year-old. They love my music since they're kids. Like, he's just been playing instrumentals of mine, like in the car, because he would write to my stuff. He would just play like, you know, like 100 playlists, like 100 instrumentals with the kids in the car, and they would love it. They would sing the songs to me sometimes and stuff. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it was wild. Like, kids really have something for, I don't know if it's the high-pitched voices. I don't know what it is. There's something though, like, that I go get, like a melody that they like or something.
It's amazing, mate. It's amazing. When you were making the music then, there's one thing is to make the music, right? And to continue doing it, you kind of need like people to say you're good or at least like it, right? What was that moment for you when you realized, oh, actually, what I'm doing is pretty good? Like, you were getting some validation from somewhere. Do you remember that being a moment?
It's probably him again. Probably my friend Jimmy D. I've got actually like 5 albums with him and a bunch of videos on YouTube. It was probably him, because it's when I moved to, like, I started making beats 2006, 2007. And I started recording with some friends of mine 2009, 2010. And then I moved to Montreal in 2012. And by that time, I had worked with a bunch of like local rappers from the city I lived in before. Jimmy was the first guy that I met who was like a local rapper in Montreal who liked exactly what I liked. And we discovered Rock Marciano together and Griselda and Makami. And we like really shared that. And he was the first guy that like, I respected his view of music like completely. And he actually like wanted to work with my beat. So I was like, oh, okay, like maybe there's something going on here. And it's with him that like I met him right before I started, like I discovered Rock Marciano and started doing the no drum beats. Yeah. So when I met him, I was still doing boom bap, like Dirty South beats, like, you know, anything. Like, we kind of transitioned that way together. And he's the one that, like, I don't know, the way we would like understand the music, I knew that I wasn't the only one. I wasn't tripping. Like, we would listen to Mock and Rock Marciano and we would go crazy for like the same thing. So then I knew that it was like, it's not subjective. Like this stuff is good. Like it's objectively just good stuff. If you understand what hip hop is, then when he's like my music, it just like, you know, naturally I felt like, okay, I could do something with this. And him and my friend Greg pushed me to start like, you know, buying verses. And when I worked with Fahim, who was the God Fahim, was the first American artist that I worked with. Like artist like in the States that I was a fan of that I reached out to and we started working on music. So as soon as I got that song done, me and my video, my friend who does videos, like we flew down to Atlanta a few months later to shoot three videos for Fahim. Sorry, the video for my song Nosferatu. All these things were all motivated. Like, it's my friends that told me, yo, you should fly down. You got to do the video. I came back, yo, you got to buy these verses. You got to contact these guys. You got to do it. Your beats are good. I told them I was selling my beats for this much. Like, oh, that's not enough. Sell them for more. Greg's big brother, Jean-Maxim, was also a good help as far as like the business operations and how I should approach that too. So a lot of friends around me helped me.
I was going to say, it sounds like you've got a really good support network there, man, like just to help. And I feel like that's crucial, man. I've got this for the podcast. Like, you know, you need that. You need people to be just giving you that different angle sometimes as well. It's always interesting. But Nicholas, it's just been, wicked chatting to you about Mossberg, about your career. I'm ready for the next stuff you're coming out with. And I was just wondering if there's someone like you're looking forward to working with or just aiming to work with or just new projects. Like, what is it? What's in your... What's in your kind of ideas?
Well, new projects. We're probably going to be able to put out Craven N3 this year.
Nice.
I'm working on it. I'm already getting some photos taken for the cover. I don't want to confirm it. It might be 2022, but I'm trying to put that out. Me and Ransom have got more stuff coming. Just that's a given. Me and a rapper in Montreal called D-Track are putting out an album.
Okay.
And we have Akhenaton from I Am on the album. You familiar with I Am, the friendship group?
No.
No, you never heard like the song La Saga with Sons of Man?
Sons of Man.
Royal Clan. Never.
Oh, right. Yes, I think I do know. Are they old school, right? Am I thinking?
Yeah, old school, legendary friendship hop. Like I Am. Yeah.
That's a blast from the past.
We've got him on the album, so.
Wicked.
Pretty great. Yeah.
Wicked. French hip hop, man. It's serious. It's serious, man. I don't know enough about it. I got a few albums in the 90s where, you know, it was a thing. It was a thing at a time where it was like, nah, this beat is banging. MC Solar, people like that. That's just a blast from the past. I've not heard that in so long. So that's wicked. I love these connections, man. Is there a dream artist you want to work with?
Probably Jay.
Jigger.
As far as living rappers, Jay-Z for sure.
Man, he's switching that style up on his rapping as well on Jay Electronica. There's a bit of, it's different.
I call A Written Testimony Dollar Menu 4. Yeah, you know the Dollar Menu trilogy by Mock Homie and
yes.
That album's Dollar Menu 4.
Yeah, that's a good shout. But yeah, I feel that Jay would be, man, it'd be amazing. I can hear that as well.
Well, yeah, and he basically shouted me out. He put me and Mock Homie's song Squeaky Hinge on his year-end playlist last year.
Oh, he did. And Squeaky Hinge is such a banger. I remember at the time thinking, because Mac's got them doing them rumbling moves as well, like over there as well. And obviously Rock and Griselda, all these people. Jigga's in that mix, man. That'd be sick. That must feel amazing, mate, to have someone like Jigga put your track on there, man.
I was going to shout out, I've got an album coming out with Planet Asia also soon, but I wanted to go ahead. What were you saying though?
No, I'll just say it's interesting because your Squeaky Hinge track sounds so different to other stuff you've done. Is it Mozambique Drill as well? Like stuff like that. I don't know. I feel like you, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go for you, my man, but I feel there's just different sounds coming from you where I feel like, who knows, in 5-6 years time, you could be doing that, man. Who knows where you'll be working with? But I'm very excited for you, man. I'm very excited for you, bro. I'm just going to end with the usual question because I just want to see where you're at right now. What is the last great piece of music you heard? Could be old, could be new. Can't be Mossberg as we've talked about it, but like the last great piece.
Let me think. What came out this year by now? There's that Pride song by Ransom that Ransom produced himself.
Yes. That is big.
Conflicted project. That's going to be on 7 also. So there's that song. That's one of the songs I probably played back the most this year.
You feeling Madlib? You feeling the new Madlib? Have you heard it?
I haven't really listened to it yet. I only heard the Road of Lonely something.
Ones or something, yeah. Souls or something, yeah.
My favorite song from last year was Sins of the Father by Ka and Rock Marciano. And Marciano explained to me how he made that beat, and that blew my mind.
Damn, really? You want to give us a little tidbit on...
Well, it basically goes back to what I was saying before, the beats and everything, so...
Oh, wicked. I mean, Carr's another one. You would... I mean, Carr seems to do his own thing at the moment, but I don't know, have you ever talked much?
I reached out to him like 2017, maybe, and he told me that he was like really busy and he wasn't doing any features at the moment, but that, like, you know, good luck with all my endeavors.
Brilliant.
It was probably one of the most official, professional, and like courteous responses knows I ever got to, like, can I do a song with you?
Because that's fascinating, because I don't know much. Well, you hear things, right? Second, third had things about Carr, and I don't really know. I know he definitely has a life outside of this. I feel like he just lives a rich life that doesn't actually have much to do with hip hop, probably. And
he's the captain of a fire station.
Exactly, right? And I feel like he's probably just got a life, and then it's horrible to say this, but it's almost like this is, to him, it's more like just a craft and a hobby, and like, I can just do this. But he's, I mean, I'm with you. Sins of the Father is right up there, and Descendants of Cain generally is an album of the year. It was just crazy, man. But yeah, man, Nicholas, man, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for bringing Marsberg and breaking the mold. No more '90s. We can do other albums now. But yeah, anytime you want to jump back on, if there's any new projects, give us a shout, and we'll share all your details and stuff on the podcast and in the notes and stuff in the liners, and you just check them out. All the crew, check them out, and yeah. Just big yourself up, man. Thank you for smashing it. Thank you for the music, bro.
Terrific. Well, thank you, man. And 7 coming soon. Watch out.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Boom. Peace out, bro.
Peace, man.